So while we're getting ready, I'm going to do a little background speaking while we're getting ready. Some of you were not with us yesterday evening. That's what happens with you have something that's in a series. Some people were there from the previous and some persons are new. So a little review. Yesterday was the first part of a series of five topics on the same theme, the theme of compassion. And yesterday was Vaishnava compassion of a devotee. And this morning is compassionate speech and the importance of speech and the importance of compassionate speech. And it's all part of a larger topic, which I'm just going to share with you briefly. The larger topic is nonviolent communication. The younger generation people here know what that is. The older generation people probably haven't heard that term so much. But it's a current term. Just hang on. It's a current term. It's connected, at least the term is somewhat connected to Buddhism, nonviolence, ahimsa. It's a core tenet of Buddhism. Plug this in. Nonviolence. And depending upon the school of thought that people have, some people contend that if we could address this one thing, we could solve a lot of managing of problems because of communication that's violent or expressions of behavior that come from frustration, from the lack of this nonviolent communication. So it has its global implications. It has its personal implications. So we spoke about compassion, and it's going to be touched on today also. There's three main elements: a cognitive element, something that you know about another person, something that you feel about that other person's situation, an affective element, and then an action-based or motivational element. You want to do something. And compassion is incomplete without all three. And we also spoke about where does compassion of a Vaishnava come from? And the answer is it comes from the same place everything comes from. Krishna. And one of the qualities of Krishna, described by Rupa Goswami in Nectar of Devotion or Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, is the quality of it's over here. The quality of one of the 64 qualities of Krishna is compassion. And the definition given by Rupa Goswami, this is his review from yesterday. The definition given by Rupa Goswami for Krishna's quality of compassion is he cannot bear the sufferings of others. And the example that was given by Rupa Goswami, right in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, is Grandfather Bhishma. When Grandfather Bhishma was parting from this world in Mahabharata, there's a statement where Bhishma was just absorbed in thought of Krishna's compassionate nature. And one of the references that he made was when the kings who had been imprisoned by Magadendra, that's the king of the Magadha province, that's who? Jarasandha, Magadendra, same. He had beaten up on a number of kings, destroyed their whole armies, and spared them, put them in jail. And many, many kings, and they were blinded, according to Bhishma's words, blinded by tears in the darkness of the prison of Magadendra. And they were praying to Krishna, please release us. And Krishna heard their prayers. They didn't send a text message, they just prayed. And Krishna heard their prayers. And Krishna came with Balaram. Big battle, smashed Jarasandha and freed all the kings. And Bhishma says, like the sun that then opened the eyes of the kings who had been blinded by the darkness of sorrow being in the prison of Magadendra, such is the compassion of Krishna. So that's characteristic of Krishna's compassion. And as Krishna, as Bhishma was thinking of Krishna, at the time Bhishma was passing, guess where Bhishma went? Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam chajatante kalevram. You go wherever your mind is absorbed at the time of death. And so what does Krishna think of? If the devotee is thinking of Krishna, Krishna thinks of his devotee. So then another reference, nice. Vishnu Sahasranam. Everyone here is familiar with that. At least know what it is. And Baladev Vidyabhusan made a commentary on all 1,000 names. And one of those names was Vasu Mana. It's the name of Krishna. And his commentary, Baladev says, what Vasu Mana means is understood in the following way. One day, when Krishna was visiting in Hastinapur, it was the daily practice when Yudhisthira, first thing in the morning after bathing and making himself externally purified, he would go and pay his respects to Krishna. But one morning when he came to see Krishna, Krishna was in meditation. So he didn't want to interrupt Krishna's meditation, so he patiently waited, but it was a long meditation. And finally, when the meditation was over, he entered, came before Krishna, paid his respects, and then asked Krishna, may I ask, you're the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you're the source of everything, what do you meditate on? And Krishna said, Bhishma. Because Bhishma was thinking of me at the time that he left his body. So I am always thinking of Bhishma. Thus, Vasumana. Whether he's meditating or whatever he's doing, Krishna's thoughts are with the devotee as the devotee's thoughts are with Krishna. That's the nature of Krishna. So, compassion is one of Krishna's qualities. It's there in a tiny, tiny, very tiny way, because we're tiny, in the hearts of every living entity. So certainly it's there within the Vaishnavas, and Vaishnavas are then conduits or instruments of Krishna's compassion. Thus we offered this standard prayer, Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyasya Kripa Sindubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. For a devotee, speech is very important. And we'll make reference to Rupa Goswami, who says in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that's like a standard text for us to understand the bhakti process. Takshri Krishna Namadi Nabhaved Grayam Indriyai Sevan Mukhihi Jivadao Jivadao, beginning with the tongue, Jivadao Svayamevas Paratyada. In essence, the verse is saying, understanding the personality of Godhead is very difficult. But one can understand him if one can control the senses, starting with the tongue. And again, Prabhupada liked to speak about this verse, and he would say, the control of the tongue is such an important amongst all the senses. You can control this one, you can control, you're better, more likely to control all the other senses, and you can control the senses, you can control the mind, you control the mind and senses, and you can understand Krishna. Your bhakti path is much more cleared. And if you, conversely, if you can't control the senses, you can't control the mind, you can't control the mind, you're not going to make much progress in the bhakti process, and that's the means to understand Krishna. So of the two functions of the tongue, one is tasting, and the other is vibrating. So taking Krishna prasad, that's not a problem. We like doing that one. And then there's the other one, the vibrating one. And the vibrating one is important to control, and the way to control it is in the way that Krishna says how to use it. Because that's what we do. Whatever we have, we received it from Krishna, we use it in a way that Krishna prescribes. So we're going to see the Bhagavad Gita verse, especially if somebody brings me a Bhagavad Gita book, where we mentioned this yesterday, chapter 17, text 15 is compassionate speech. Krishna speaks about how to use this power of speech. Rupa Goswami has one other verse that many of us know. It begins, Vacha Vegam, Manasa Krodha Vegam, Jiva Vegam, Udarpastha Vegam, etc. There's six Vegas. You're going to see this word again in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 17. Vega means urge or pushing. There's a pushing of the tongue. And it appears twice. There's six things. This verse is the lead verse of the whole nectar of instruction, and Rupa Goswami says, you can do these six, you're qualified to become a spiritual master for the whole world. We have spiritual masters for the whole world here. Just control the six urges. And of the six, two of them are related to the tongue. Two of the six. That's a high percentage. So, vacha has to do with speech, the urge to speak, and jiva vegam, the urge of the tongue, which is speaking and eating. When you're leaving here and going to wherever you're going and you pass by a shopping area, take a like little survey, mental or visual survey, of how many places are there that are eating and drinking. You know, not just, you know, the McDonald's, but, you know, something to do with eating and drinking without detailing. It's got a hold of people. And it's important to control that urge, speaking and eating. So here's what Krishna says about speaking. Anudvega karam vakyam satyam priya hitam chayat svadhya vyasanam chaiva vanmaya tapa uchate. I want to get one. Oh, here it is. Okay. So the terms, there's the word vega. It's embedded, anudvega. Karam. Anudvega karam means not agitating. Not agitating. And satyam, we all know what that means, truthful. And priya, very dear or pleasing. And hitam is beneficial. So these are four things for proper use of speech. Proper use of speech is to use something, proper use of anything is to use that anything or something in such a way that Krishna is pleased. So Krishna is disclosing what pleases him, how we use our power of speech. Not agitating, truthful, very dear or very pleasing and beneficial. That's tough, because as we had a little discussion yesterday, when you're speaking even compassionately and the truth, sometimes the truth hurts. So sometimes we don't even speak the truth because we know it's going to be agitating to the mind of the other person. Discretion is the better part of valor. I have to be truthful, Prabhu. I'm just being truthful. So being truthful is 1/4, and then the anudvega karam, not agitating. Priya, sweet, pleasing, and hitam, beneficial. And we don't even always know what's beneficial. We may think something is beneficial and it's not going to be beneficial. Or time, place, and circumstance. Maybe another time, place, and circumstance. But so it takes some refinement of consciousness to be able to do this. Here's Srila Prabhupada's wonderful transcendental purport, 1715. Gives further understanding on this. One should not speak in such a way as to agitate the minds of others. Now you could read that where your intention is to agitate others, or the result is you agitate the minds of others. We'll take it, you know, the stronger way. In such a way, the end result is you don't agitate the mind of others. Of course, when a teacher speaks, he can speak the truth for the instruction of his students, but such a teacher should not speak to those who are not his students if he will agitate their minds. This is relationship based. This is penance. That's the word tapa. This is penance as far as talking is concerned. Besides that, one should not talk nonsense. The process of speaking in spiritual circles is to say something upheld by the scriptures. One should at once quote from scriptural authority to back up what he is saying. At the same time, such talk should be very pleasurable to the ear. By such discussions, one may derive the highest benefit. That's what comes to you by that austerity of speech, and elevate human society. Others are hitam, others are benefited. There is a limitless stock of Vedic literature, and one should study this. This is called penance of speech. Short to the point, purport. So here's the translation. So, van is the same root, vak, vacha, it's speech. Related to speech, tapa. This is austerity. Now, what's the purpose of austerity? Or same, what's the purpose of anything? The purpose of austerity, well, the external part is to control the mind and senses. But what's the purpose of controlling of the mind and senses? It's to please Krishna. That's bhakti. We're not advised, negative, we're not advised to just whimsically do some austerity. We are advised to do austerity that's pleasing to Krishna. So we need to know what is pleasing to Krishna, what's austerity that's pleasing to Krishna, and we need to have our compass straight. We're heading towards what's pleasing to Krishna. That's bhakti. Anukulyena Krishna Anushilanam. That's bhakti, pleasing to Krishna, favorable to Krishna. So here's the translation. Austerity of speech consists in speaking words that are truthful, pleasing, beneficial, and non-agitating to others, and also in regularly reciting Vedic literature. that's this svadhyaya abhyasa. Abhyasa is practice. Svadhyaya abhyasa. And when you have that abhyasa, that practice, that's what your consciousness is situated in. It's cleansed consciousness. And cleansed consciousness, then you see things from that place of how Krishna sees things, and you can speak things as Krishna speaks things, or as at least the mindfulness of what will be pleasing to Krishna in life's complicated and different circumstances. At least there's some indication from having immersed yourself or regularly having studied the scripture. Say it again. Studying of scripture helps austerity of speech. It helps use that power of the sense of the tongue for tasting and vibrating that will help us to control the other senses. Because isn't it that if you're going to do those four things, the mind can't be so vacillating. It helps. You need some degree of mind control in order to do these things consistently. One helps the other, and vice versa, is the point. And when the mind and senses are controlled, then there's consciousness is more clear. It works the opposite way. It's one of the verses of King Rishabhdev to his sons. Karmatmakam yena sharira bandha. The mind becomes colored by misidentification with the body and thinking in terms of body and thinking in terms of I and mine. The mind becomes colored. Karmatmakam yena sharira bandha. And when it becomes perpetually bound. We don't have to do that. That's the conditioned tendency. So he's advising, as Krishna's advising, to go on the other side of that bondage, sharira bandha. So that's tapa. It's not just to get released from bondage, it's to please Krishna. That's how you get released from bondage. Now, in the world, that's not how we experience things. Especially in modern times where culture has gone way down. The culture barometer is in the danger zone. And there's things that just amplify that with technology like internet. And you know, people are so irresponsible to say any darn thing to as many people as they can. And it pollutes the atmosphere. Not only, you know, supposing you don't indulge in that, you're less vulnerable, but it's understanding the science of Sankhya, the ether is contaminated because sound travels through ether. Yes? Ether is contaminated beside the air and the water and the earth with fertilizers and pesticides and so many other things. The most subtle of all the elements, of the material elements, gross elements, is ether, and is polluted like anything. So what's a nice fellow to do? Just sitting here. So yoga becomes even more imperative. And vibrating, proper sound vibration becomes more imperative because it helps to purify the ether. Isn't it? That's our science. Just like maybe some of you have been to 26 Second Avenue. How many have been to 26 Second Avenue? May you someday visit 26 Second Avenue. Just walking in the place, you feel something. I had this experience long ago, not too long ago, 10 years ago, I visited Hawaii, and I visited Hawaii because Vatsal Prabhu was in Hawaii, and I had such high regard for Vatsal. And year after year, he would extend an invitation, please come, because he was the president of Hawaii. I didn't want to go to Hawaii. But I wanted to reciprocate, so I went. And Vatsal had shifted by that time to Houston, but I already had a ticket, so I went. And I was curious. There was somebody going up and down the hall into a room down the end of the hall, and I was nosy, and I wanted to know what's going on. It's like during, you know, the worship time in the morning. So I went and opened the door, and this wave of energy came out of the room. It was Prabhupada's quarters, where I was told by the Hawaii devotees, Prabhupada spent more time here doing his translation work than anywhere else in the whole world, and you can feel the vibration. You can feel the vibration. So many years later, by the presence of a pure devotee dictating the Bhaktivedanta purports, etc. So many other nice, wherever the kirtan is being chanted, Lord Chaitanya is there, etc., etc. That the whole atmosphere becomes sanctified just by that sound vibration. That the whole world becomes sanctified by that sound vibration. And the consciousness behind the vibration is important too, isn't it? Not just the broadcaster of that sound. So we're responsible for the broadcaster part. And that has to do with this austerity of speech. Instead of this, where people are communicating, but it's dysfunctional. Because they're, one doesn't understand the other, and they're frustrated because they're not being understood, when the first element of, we expressed this yesterday, first element of good communication is seek first to understand before trying to be understood. Now, people don't do that so much, but it helps. And on many levels it helps, because if you understand the audience, if you understand the other person, you'll know how to speak to the other person because you know the other person. And if you don't know the other person, it may be one of these. Or, like was the question last night, when you say something that's intended to be compassionate and it's taken the other way. Why did you say that? Oh. So effective communication requires understanding the other person, that this is the main message from the 2.5 days of Bir Krishnamurti's presentation in Gita Nagari, was understand the other person's needs before you try to make your need understood. And when you understand one another's needs, then you can speak or act in such a way that addresses the need. You may not be able to fulfill the need, but at least you can be aware of what the need is. And if the communication is not effective, why? Not because you're mean-spirited, just, you know, without going into it too much. Teenagers, etc. Husband and wife, you know, children, community members, and somebody you get along well with, and somebody is a little not so well. And so, how to have effective communication? How to have nonviolent communication? How to have austerity of speech? It's not easy. But, you know, there's teachings being made available to our Vaishnava community from people that have really deeply studied this, and it's a good subject matter to become more conversant with. The mentor of this model is pictured here, Marshall Rosenberg. So over the past 35 years or so, has been an advocate of nonviolent communication, even before Buddhism became really popular in the West. He was way ahead of his time and understood not just Buddhism, but the importance of communication. And so, on one of his things is, you know, we can do it as role play, but he did it just with his own hands. So over here is a giraffe, and over here is a jackal. And he would take up the scenarios and say, here's jackal speak, rah, rah, rah. And how does that feel? Then here's the giraffe that wants to communicate, say, message, but it's giraffe speak. And so you can communicate the truth in a way that's according to what Krishna says. Now, he wasn't making reference to Bhagavad Gita. He's speaking principle without the authority of... So we want to be under the authority of Krishna and do what Krishna wants because Krishna wants. That's what we want, what Krishna wants. And that spiritualizes everything. So it takes it into the Vaishnava level or the spiritual level, not just being less disturbing while we're moving about in the course of our lifetime in our capacity to make some sounds. He explains that this, he picked a giraffe because proportionate to the body size even, giraffe has a big heart. And Bir Krishna Maharaj studied with this gentleman for quite some time, learned everything for the purpose of passing it on to the devotee audience. Now here's some examples of what not to do and what to do. Ramchandra Puri was a disciple of Madhavendra Puri, and as was Ishwara Puri, the spiritual master of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Ishwara Puri became very dear to Madhavendra Puri because of his humility and his strong desire to be of service to Madhavendra Puri, particularly repeated over and over is towards the final stages of his life. Just menial service, although he was most elevated, erudite Vaishnav. But he just wanted to be in service to his spiritual master, Madhavendra Puri, who passed on the fullness of his mercy to Ishwara Puri. And in contrast, a diametric contrast, was Paramananda Puri, or excuse me, Ramchandra Puri. Ramchandra Puri was criticizing Madhavendra Puri for his absorption in Krishna Bhakti and the way that he was absorbed in Krishna Bhakti. And he made remarks directly to Madhavendra Puri, who said, leave this place. I never want to see you again. If I have to die seeing your face, I'll go to hell. Leave. I never want to see you again. Do whatever you want to do. And so he did. He continued to offend other people. That's what he wanted to do. And it was kind of like his thing. He would go from place to place. He was a sannyasi. He would go from place to place and be treated very respectfully and therefore have privileges of intimacy, and then in intimacy seeing what he would consider to be discrepancy and then just criticize the person. That was his thing. So one time Ramchandra Puri came to Jagannath Puri and he heard about his godbrother's disciple Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, so he wanted his audience. And they had some exchanges and he couldn't find anything wrong with them. He was frustrated. So he found something. You eat too much. You're a sannyasi. Shouldn't eat so much. So Mahaprabhu immediately cut half. He was eating small, but he was saying you're eating too much, so he cut it in half. And everyone was, oh, he's eating little already and now he's half of that. Ramchandra Puri should leave Puri. And then he escalated. He went to see Lord Chaitanya and he saw some ants. That's what he's pointing to. See these ants on the floor? You're eating sweets. And sannyasi should not eat so many sweets. You'll become fallen. And Mahaprabhu didn't respond. He didn't say, well, ants are everywhere and I wasn't eating sweets. He didn't defend himself. He just didn't respond. eventually Ramchandrapuri went to the next place to find his fault-finding business. But the business of criticizing another, rightfully or wrongfully, when one doesn't have the relationship of teacher-student, just like Prabhupada wrote here, you don't speak, and you certainly don't speak in a way that's agitating to the mind. It's not okay. It's not okay. Then another nice example, right from scripture, is Vidura. Now, the painting, we saw this painting yesterday. This is Vidura, and over there is Maitreya, and there's 2.5 cantos of Maitreya speaking to Vidura. And after Vidura heard to his heart's satisfaction and became a perfected soul, hearing from Maitreya, Vidura finished his pilgrimage and went back to Hastinapur for one purpose only, to deliver his brother, his elder brother. So when he went back to Hastinapur, they were so happy. Vidura, you've been gone for so many, many years, and we didn't know anything. You didn't send us any text messages or anything. We didn't know what was going on. But now you're well and so happy to see you. Please tell us of your travels. And Vidura didn't speak about the departure of the Yadu dynasty, because it would be specifically, the language in the verse is apriyam. It would be disturbing. So he didn't say, although he knew, he didn't say. So sometimes we don't say. And using this example, it's okay to sometimes not say. Now later they're going to find out. But it doesn't have to be the first thing. Hey, guess what? Rah, rah, rah. Or, sorry to deliver the bad news. So, I heard a lecture where Prabhupada was explaining, according to Chanakya, his instructions, it's not good to be deliverer of bad news. And Prabhupada explained, because when you deliver bad news, then the hard or hurt feelings of those who receive the bad news connect that bad feeling with the person who delivered the news. So it's an act of diplomacy in that case. But in this case, it's an instruction of Krishna. Because the purpose of speech is to please Krishna. And the purpose of pleasing Krishna is certainly something that's beneficial. So if something needs to be said, because this is where the question-answer thing starts getting like all over the place and subtle. Sometimes we don't say something, although we know it's beneficial, because it may be detrimental, may disturb the mind. So now what do you do in that circumstance? Kind of like damned if you do and damned if you don't. You didn't tell me. You knew and you didn't tell me. Well, it said not to disturb the mind. It didn't want to disturb your mind. Yeah, but you should have told me. So it's delicate. And how do you navigate your way through delicate territory? You pray to Krishna a lot. You have to be, you know, guided by Super Soul. And sometimes it's appropriate to say, and sometimes it's appropriate to not say. Then after that exchange with Yudhisthira, he waited some time and got together with his elder brother and blasted him. Now, in Vedic culture, the younger brother looks up to the elder brother. And what the elder brother says, that's it. What Yudhisthira said, that's it. What Lord Ramachandra said, that's it. I mean, they would present their alternative view, but whatever was decided by the elder brother, that's it. That's culture. Now there's some things that trump that. One has to have good discretion to know what trumps that. But in this case, Vidura was doing this even before. Vidura was respected as part of his profile in the royal assembly, as he was considered to be wise. And there's a reason why he's one of the 12 Mahajans, or as Yamaraj, taking that position of Vidura. He has intrinsic superlative wisdom, and he always advised people with wisdom, and people knew it. Except Dhritarashtra knew it, but he couldn't follow it. So he succeeded, because everything, he was at the fag end of his life, all that sons, everything that Vidura had said would happen, it happened. And so he spoke with really heavy, "Get out of here. You're living like a dog. Living off the scraps of Bhima, who broke the legs of your son, Duryodhana. Get out while the getting's good. Don't die in this condition. Become the detached from this worldly attachment," etc., etc. Very strong. The verse after verse after verse, hammer, hammer, sledgehammer. And as a result, although it was speech that was perhaps not pleasing, ultimately the beneficial ruled over the not pleasing part. And he went to the forest with Gandhari, and he demonstrated his noble position. He fixed his mind. He knew the art, as did many other kings, not just brahmanas, of meditation. Meditation with such intensity. It wasn't a Zippo lighter and some kerosene. It was his intense meditation. His body just burst into flames. He had that capacity. Just misdirected because of attachment. Problem. Attachment can make one blind. And our founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada, he helped us, inspired us to open our eyes, which were closed tight with the darkness of ignorance, with the torchlight of knowledge, and gave us this inspiration to become spiritually situated and be compassionate representatives of Krishna and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the disciplic succession. This is a photograph in New York, the old Brooklyn Temple in New York, with the lotus asana that now is in Gita Nagari. Those of you who have been to Gita Nagari will recognize that one. When end with this little Prabhupada story. One summer morning, really hot in July, Prabhupada was visiting, and morning class, he was speaking on this point of compassion and the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and give the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to others. He said, "My spiritual master found me in some dark place. And although I was fully unqualified, he made me very fortunate." And his voice became choked, and he paused, and everyone went, "Jai Prabhupada." And then he instructed me, "You go to the West, English-speaking parts of the world, and you similarly make other people fortunate." And so I came. And now I'm instructing all of you. Oh. You go forward, receive this benefit, and go forward and make others fortunate. The drums pounded and cymbals banged, and Jai Prabhupada. So that's, you know, a burst of enthusiasm, and then carrying that out is another thing. Our lifetime is meant for that. And let it be done in a way that, one more time, we're only instruments. We're not rescuing the world, the fallen conditioned souls, like we're up there and they're down there kind of thing. Not like that. Instruments of the mercy of the merciful, and to some degree receive it, and some degree try to carry it forward. And this principle of compassionate speech, where we're instruments of the will of the supreme authority and the representatives of that supreme authority in disciplic succession, and that's who we are. We're just instruments of that divine dispensation of mercy. And using the mind to control our speech in such a way that it's these four things. Let's go back to the four things. Anudvega karam, it's not agitating. Satyam, it's truth. Priya, very dear or pleasing, and hitam, beneficial. Had a discussion after the evening class yesterday with somebody that wanted to talk more about hitam, beneficial. Sometimes we don't know what's beneficial. Sometimes we think we know what's beneficial, and we offer advice to people that we think is beneficial. We don't necessarily know their circumstance and everything. So the intention is good, but good intention isn't good enough in practical matters. So we have to become qualified Vaishnavas. We have to receive lots and lots and lots of mercy and lots and lots and lots of purification and get rid of lots and lots of false ego, so we can be instruments of Krishna's will. Striving for that, that's pleasing to Krishna. Just like we heard yesterday. Lord Vishnu saying to Karna Muni, because of compassion for all living entities, you'll become self-realized. Okay, so that's our discussion for today. Any questions or discussion topics you'd like to bring up? No? Oh, you have. Okay.
Then I have two questions. One is from the morning class.
Morning class, okay.
This was about the point that you made about the defiance of the demons for the authority.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I was kind of reflecting back, that we live in a culture where actually defiance is kind of a value that sometimes doubter would glorify, that you are... You should be, it's like defiance of authority.
Challenge authority. That was a slogan during my college days. That was it. Challenge authority. Anybody over 30, you can't trust them. Wisdom, forget it.
So this point about the differentiation between independent-mindedness and independently thoughtful.
It's a big one. Well, there's beautiful question. There's two main measures. One is introspection. The other is you hold up to the light of authority. So, if I'm being independently thoughtful, the introspection is: Am I primarily and principally interested in discovering the truth, or aligning myself with the truth with a capital T, or am I acting whimsically, independently, trying to carve my own way? Independently of, descending mercy. What's my, the intention? The intention behind the act. And then the other is the outcome. You know, are the conclusions reached consistent with the conclusions of great authorities? Because if I'm independent, simply independent and not independently thoughtful, if I'm independent-minded, I'm going to end up way over there. So that's an external, the other is internal measure. And it's subtle. You know, then, you know, a third is close consultation with somebody that knows you well. There's a friend that knows you well. And they're not interested in managing your life, they're interested in being your well-wisher. Or someone that's a guide, mentor, you know, an elder, a wise person that's not interested in controlling your life, they're interested in helping you reach the destination you want to reach. So that's a third resource. Yeah.
This class, this point about the speech, the control of the speech, and it seems to me that the speech is an expression, or it's like the
yes.
one of the senses.
Yes.
But then there has to be an investment in consciousness.
Yes.
And this consciousness is fixed. It would be cosmetic if I just work on the aspect of speech.
Well, it according to our acharyas, it's not simply cosmetic. One helps the other. Mm-hmm. Now, the principal thing is internal, as you're indicating. But it's not just cosmetic. One helps the other. You have to, using a word that Satchinanda Swami uses is alignment. If the internal is strong, the external has to be in alignment. So the purpose of the external is the alignment purpose. So I want that Krishna will be pleased. So it's not just adjusting cosmetically, but it's aligning. So one helps the other. Or, say it negatively, if I don't do that, it's going to impede, you know, the internal. Pitter-patter. Watch. Okay. Yes.
As a question about the agitating mind, when we
the which mind?
Agitated
mind.
Yeah.
Agitating others' minds
yeah.
or our own.
Others.
Okay.
So when we start speaking about philosophy, Krishna consciousness, others' mind may get agitated. So how do we distinguish what to speak and what not to speak?
It depends on the circumstance, so some factors in the circumstance could be, you know, the time and the sense, your sense of judgment of the other person, your understanding of your own capacity, even at that moment, and there may be a sense you need to gauge. This is a super soul matter. Gauge that there initially there may be some discomfort, but I have the sense that this person can make this step towards thoughtfulness, mindfulness, and it, you know, so it's a time, place, circumstance judgment. As you're asking your question, I'm thinking of this plane ride I had from New York to Chicago, and it was at Southwest Airlines, and so a Columbia University grad student, American girl, chose to sit next to me in the middle seat, and she immediately pulled out her Bible. I thought, oh boy, here we go. I'm in a dhoti and she's sitting next to me and pulls out the Bible. So I thought I was going to get saved or something. So she wasn't that spirit. She just was a curious type of person. And, you know, educated Columbia University student. I didn't know that when she sat down, but that came out. So we had this discussion. I was just, I didn't do what Prabhupada did to agitate the mind saying you're not Christian. Although Prabhupada did that, and he spoke about it later. He was in London and said, when I was in Sweden, I was in Stockholm. After a program, one young man came and said, yes, Swamiji, you spoke so nicely, and I'm also Christian. And Prabhupada said, I immediately said, you are not Christian. Although I had never met this young man before. You're not Christian. And he was like, whoa. You've agitated my mind, sir. And he said, you know, why do you say that? He said, does it say in your Bible, thou shalt not kill? Yes. And are you eating meat? Yes. So you're not a Christian. You're not following what Christ said. Thou shalt not kill. Now, where it went after that, we don't know. But that's the acumen of a great acharya who knows when to say and when not to say such things. He didn't say that in every circumstance. But in that circumstance, he chose to say. So the power of the person speaking, in this case you, and the time and the place and the circumstance of the individual, your sense of, you know, what they may need to get, you know, to receive something. What's the goal? The goal is the beneficial part. And there may be some, even in the case of dealing with a friend. Not just a new person, a friend. And you see something. So, you know, the saying is, you see something, you say something. But then a devotee may want to be more than just say something. They may want to consider what's the best way to say it, what's the best time to say it, who should say it, what circumstance. Maybe I need to invest in the relationship more before I say that, so the person understands I'm coming from a place of affection for them more than they do today, you know, tomorrow. Because it may jeopardize the relationship and then everything closes and the beneficial part went out the window, as well as their mind was agitated. So there's many variables. Someone else? You had something?
You answered it while answering this.
That's it.
It was a similar question.
Okay. Got it. So better watch out, his friends, next time he sees you doing something, he may say it. Hey, what are you doing? That's it? No, just scratching. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.